This is your Frederick Real Estate Update, a conversation about the regional real estate market with tips for buyers and sellers. Your hosts, RE/MAX Results' Darren Ahern and Presidential Bank Mortgage's Terry Kernan.
Hey folks, how's everyone doing out there? Welcome back to your Frederick Real Estate Update. I am Darren Ahern with RE/MAX Results, bringing you over 20 years experience in the Maryland and PA region. And I also have with me the man with all the money over there in this awesome spring market of real estate from Presidential Bank Mortgage, Mr.
Terry Kernan.
How we doing?
Doing great.
We are great. Definitely at the height of the springtime. The weather is showing to prove that, isn't it?
Yeah. Finally, it's breaking.
Yeah.
Finally, it's breaking.
Doing good. So we're going to get right into it, Terry. I told everybody the last few weeks here, and no one has got it because they haven't called in or shared or nothing, of the $100 gift card giveaway. We'll either do Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever it is. To whoever can tell us about inventory. So I haven't shared that in the last 2 weeks. The big thing is how many homes are for sale in Frederick County. So that could be up or down by five, you know, number up or down. So you don't have to get it right on the mark, but we want you to get really close of who can do that. And since we're doing recording today, I'm doing a home open house over at 1825 Tuscarora Drive here in Frederick. And I'll be there from 1 to 3 o'clock. So you guys are welcome to come on by. I'm also giving away a $50 gift card to Dunkin' Donuts as well. Since there's one like right around the corner, I thought that'd be kind of a fun thing to give out. But you guys have to call. You either have to come by and tell me, or you have to give me a phone call, and our information is at the very end of the program with my cell phone number on it. And you can go ahead and call me this weekend and tell me what's that number, how many homes are for sale in Frederick County right now. So, and then after we get through all that, I'll give the rest of the update of numbers and things like that as well. So, all right, let's get right into it, Terry. Let's talk real quick. What's going on, interest rate kind of a thing? What's the average, what are you seeing out there as far as loan applications, interest rates, and some other questions I got for you that we're all wondering about?
So let's start with the big, you know, the big thing, and that is the rates. The rates have gone up, and they went up because of the inflation numbers that we got last week. So they've continued to climb. We're now looking in the 7.4 range.
Okay.
7.25 maybe. FHA is going to be a little lower. VA will be a little lower. But we're getting up to the 7.5. We're heading towards 7.5%. So the big question is why, and when is it going to stop?
Yep.
And so let's address why. The inflation numbers that I talked about last week that kind of rocked everybody's world when it came in, but I wasn't surprised, as I talked about, is the inflation numbers for the PPI and the CPI were high. Now, the PPI was fine, the producer price index, but the true thing was the consumer price index came in at 0.4% when they were hoping for 0.2%. And that kind of threw everything into a tizzy. Then retail sales numbers came out. So we've been getting kicked a little bit here with the rates. They will settle down. I believe they will settle down. But I truly believe that after running all those numbers and all the things I talked about last week, is that our inflation is not going to get under control until we stop using our credit cards, stop spending, and
stop
so forth.
Stop spending.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we stand. So the big thing is, when are the Feds going to cut rates? I've said all along on this, you know, no matter what they say, they probably won't do it until the fall, or maybe not at all. But my guess is because the election,
yeah,
they will do a cut right before the election. But that's just my guesstimate. But it doesn't look like they're very favorable for cutting rates this year. So we may have to look for next year.
All right. So here's a good question someone may be thinking is, what would be the strongest thing to have happen that would maybe bring interest rates down a little bit? Would it be the Fed cutting rates to whatever degree, or would it be inflation numbers coming down? Which, in your opinion, would be the better thing to happen for more favorable interest rates?
So if the inflation numbers come down, mm-hmm, then they will cut rates.
Huh.
But they will not cut rates until they feel that they've got this inflation under control.
So those work together.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So when we talked, a year and a half ago, it was two years now, when we talked about transitory inflation, mm-hmm. they kept saying transitory, and I said, nah, this isn't transitory. This is real inflation. So what their reaction after realizing that this was real inflation and was just not, because of the pandemic, after that, rates shot up tremendously. We went from, 3% to 5%, and which felt like overnight.
Yeah.
And that was their raising rates, trying to control the, trying to get inflation under control. But I'm worried about these credit cards and the price of gas.
Yeah, credit cards. It's funny because gas is still lower than the high we used to see years and years ago. What was it during the big recession, 08, 9, and 10?
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of remember pulling in the gas station one time with our Suburban and how it had been
$1. Mortgage payment.
It was $1.89, $2.19, $2.39 forever. And then it hit over $3, which we're at now, but for being 15 years ago. But then I remember the day it went over $4 a gallon, and it was over $100 to fill our Suburban up. And that's when it hit me. That's when I took a deep breath and thought, this is really, really bad. This is crazy. What's going on in our economy? And just think, that was literally about 12 to 13 years ago,
Mm-hmm.
So if you compare it to that, it's not so bad right now, but when you look at the overall, how it affects everything as far as cost for everything, this is something. And the idea that we literally could take action on our own 2 feet to go ahead and bring them down, and it's like, what are we waiting for? We can do this. We have the capability to do this. We could get gas down to, $2 a gallon again or whatever it is. So, yeah. And it's interesting to think the dynamics of what would happen to everything, cost of goods, interest rates, life, just all of life. If literally right now, if we saw gasoline go to, let's just say $2.50 a gallon for unleaded, what would life look like if that happened overnight? What would happen?
I think that it's what people want to see.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're holding something up their sleeve for a late run before the election of gas prices coming down.
Yeah.
Remember, whoever is the sitting president, whatever party's in there, generally they want everybody to be happy when they go to pull that lever.
Exactly.
If gas prices are going to come down, if they're going to control them or do whatever, increase the supply, whatever they're going to do, they're not going to do it now because they'll be showing their cards. It's going to be closer to the election.
Yeah,
so
that would be everything.
I think we're stuck with these rates. I think we're going to be definitely seven or above for a little bit here until they can figure it out.
Yep, and literally what's funny, Terry, is most people have heard us say this before, interest rates right now with where they are, a little bit over seven, is historically in the last 80, 90 years, this is the overall average of interest rates. We're sitting right on average. The problem is the monthly payment amount and affordability in retrospect to what people make income-wise and versus the costs of goods and everything else that's out there that you have to pay for. That is the major, major factor that completely blows up. Who cares what that average, if you're excited about the fact that we're just hanging on to an average interest rate over all these years. You can't really compare it in retrospect to the 70s or 60s when the dollar was how much stronger, and the fact that you could, go to the grocery store with $20 and fill up an entire, grocery cart totally full. I'm sure you remember them days with $20 and feed a family of four or five. Whereas today, $20 gets you two little tiny baby bags that come out that can feed one or two people for a day. So that's the difference, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's get right on into the next thing I wanted to talk about is you had someone say about a cash purchased, somebody buying a house or property in cash versus taking out a loan. And you had said to me how they should have never done that. That was a bad move. And I'm like, why? That sounds like the smartest thing somebody could do. Why would somebody never want to pay cash for buying a property? What happened there?
So I had two situations where they both paid cash. They both put in offers for cash. So if you do an offer for cash, that's great. And if you show up at the table with cash, that's great, okay? But when you talk to your financial planner and you let them know that you did a cash offer and I need you to liquidate some of my funds, funds have been doing so well lately over the last 12 months.
Oh, yeah. Investments, yeah.
Investments. That to do an all-cash deal, you have to cash in stocks. You got to cash in 401k, whatever the deal is. And that's going to cost penalty. That's going to cost taxes. And, you know, some of these people are in a 37.5% tax bracket.
Wow.
So when you are looking and deciding the strategy, you and I talk about you have to have that plan. You got to have that strategy in making sure that you win the house. So the first thing that they're saying is, well, I got all this cash with you know, my investment banker and I'm going, or my financial planner, and I'm going to basically just, you know, pay cash. I can do that. So that's a conversation that's usually between the realtor and the borrower, right? But what the borrower should realize is before I do anything, before I come up with the idea that I'm just going to pay cash, they really need to talk to the financial advisor.
Yeah.
And make sure that it is done correctly.
Yep.
What is done correctly? I had somebody 3 months ago, they paid cash, they depleted all of their 401k, they depleted everything, and they paid cash for it because it was at an auction, they had to pay cash. And then a week later, I came behind and gave them 80% of their cash back. So they paid full cash, which was $350, and then I came back and gave them a loan for 270, basically, that repaid them their cash that they could replenish into their 401k. You have 90 days or 180, depending on, but you need to talk to your financial planner. They will tell you the exact dates and the exact way to do it. So I just think it's very, very important that winning a deal with cash is great, but you really have to plan farther ahead than just saying, I'm going to pay cash.
Yep, definitely. All right, so make sure, talk to your financial planner and all that before you pull money out. And, of course, Terry, I've always said that with buyers, whether it's just simple down payment money. If somebody's just putting money down, I always say to them, make sure you get with your financial planner to make sure that you don't take out more too much that you now get penalized and have to either put it back or you just get penalized. Versus an allowed amount that's kind of like you can take up to and it doesn't affect you whatsoever. And so those rules are really, really important. And I imagine I don't deal with the financial world like that to know how often do these numbers and formulas and all these crazy calculations, how much do they change? But I guarantee you, you want to make sure you don't make one wrong step with moving money in any which way regard as well. So it's almost as significant as saying, Terry, during somebody buying a house, we have a couple now, and I said, don't buy furniture. Don't open an account.
Please don't.
Don't buy a car. Don't open accounts. Like, don't change your living way at all. Like, none. If anything, cut back. If anything, don't spend as much. Like, just slow down life. Hit the pause button. Don't do, like, nothing for 45 days. And I have a client now building a brand new home. They were in a major car wreck about a month ago, and they got pretty good amount of money and a lot of equity and savings and things. And they had asked me that question. They said, look, we got our car totaled. We need another car. We're waiting on a settlement. And we're thinking of, obviously, we need to get another car. First thing I said is, are you getting enough settlement to pay cash for another car? Smartest thing you can ever do is don't get a car loan. Pay cash, get another one. And they were like, yeah, we're kind of considering that, but we just realized we're getting all this money. It's coming from a settlement of a car wreck. we're getting this insurance money. It's going to flow into our account. And then a day or two later, it's going to flow back out and buying a new car, another vehicle. And the lender, like, how does that affect our mortgage stuff? And I'm like, oh, you better talk to, you know, the lender that you're working with this new home build to find out how, what documentation, what do you need? Have you had that ever happen where somebody's had a car wreck or a settlement or some lawsuit or something happened where they had money come in and a whole bunch of money go out and you guys are like, whoa, wait a minute. What is that? What's that all about?
It just keep the paper trail.
That's
keep
the it. Paper trail.
If you think you're keeping too much of the paper trail, that's fine.
Okay.
Let us decide what we need when we see the paper trail.
Okay.
Because we look at it with our eyes, but the ultimate person that's going to review it is when it gets shipped to an investor and they go through it and make sure. So if you have a story to tell, tell the story.
Yeah, write it out.
Whatever you have, let's put it in the file now.
Okay. So those are some good things. Last thing is the loan types and loan to value ratios. So those I know have changed over a little bit of time here and there. But for the most part, let's take a breakdown of each of those. This is the area that you guys live in and work in. Let's start with conventional. What is this whole idea when people call in and they say, or get with you, how much do I qualify for? How much of a loan can I get? How much of a house can I buy? How do you back into that with this whole idea of front-end and back-end loan-to-value ratios?
So the first thing I ask is, how much money do you have to work with to put down?
Okay.
Big question, right?
Yep.
So the second thing is, how much is the house you're looking at, or what is your price range? If they say, okay, my price range is $400,000, then on a conventional loan, if you're a first-time home buyer, you can put as little as 3% down. If you're a second-time home buyer, you're probably looking at putting, not probably, you're looking at putting at least 5% down, okay? Anything less than 20%, you're going to have private mortgage insurance on a conventional loan. That private mortgage insurance is a rate that is given to you. Obviously, the lower the rate, the better. But that will be the term for your monthly fee if you go the monthly route. It's easier to just explain the monthly route. That fee is determined by two things: how much you're putting down, but also what is your credit score. So it's very, very, very important to know where that cutoff is, because the higher the lower the credit score, the higher the rate factor for the private mortgage insurance. So I have a customer that came in this week, and we were looking. I always look at conventional first because FHA has an upfront mortgage insurance premium of 1.75%. So, but the conventional, you can do, 5% down. Once you get to 20, you don't need that mortgage insurance. There's a lot of other things, but we don't have time to go over it right now with the conventional. But if you have a credit challenge or you need a little more leniency with approval, then we're looking at FHA, okay? FHA is going to require 3.5% down, but they are a little more flexible on credit scores. So their rate factor is 0.55%.
Right.
And that is a pretty good rate factor, considering for years it was 0.85.
I was going to say it was higher before.
Yes. So FHA is 0.55. So if somebody has dinged credit, that credit score, if it's at 680 or 670, you're going to still get the same 0.55 as you did with a credit score of, 720 or 780. So that's where we take a look at going with FHA. Great program, but only 3.5% down. Then we're going to slide over if somebody is a veteran, okay? Best program out there, 100% financing, no money out of pocket except for closing costs. So what do I tell people about closing costs? Whether you're getting a conventional, an FHA or VA, closing costs could run anywhere from 4 to 4.5%.
Yep.
In that general range, sometimes 5% if your loan amount is in the $200 range, $200,000. And then Another great program is USDA, 0% financing, rural housing, same guidelines as FHA, but the ratios, your income, debt-to-income ratios have to be lower on a USDA, but that's a great program. You don't have to be a first-time home buyer for FHA. You don't have to be for VA, and you don't have to be conventional. You know, you don't have to be just a first-time home buyer.
Okay, so when you're qualifying someone, the loan-to-value ratio, or the debt to ratios, and all those, that I get people, they look at me weird as a realtor when I start talking about like your front-end, back-end ratios. And a lot of people I've learned, Terry, over my career, they assume that all the mortgage loan types, conventional, USDA, FHA, VA, everybody uses the same calculation. And whenever I show them and say, no, wait a minute. No, if you go with this kind of loan, a conventional, let's just say conventional loan, your ratio, like your income, if it's, say, $10,000 a month, you can't have but no more. Your max amount of mortgage loan you could ever get is XYZ based on this ratio right here. And what is that number? I think it's
so
do conventional.
So let's do conventional. So we basically approve you for not so much a sales price. We back into the sales price.
Right.
What we approve you for is an overall payment.
Yep.
That to include taxes, to include insurances.
Right.
To include HOA fees, condo fees, anything like that. We include that into the payment. So when we talk the payment, we're talking about everything to do with the house. That is your front ratio.
Yeah, okay. So let's say $3,000 is that number. By the time you do your principal, all these numbers we put into the pie, $3,000 is the mortgage payment. And if somebody makes $10,000 a month income that's going for this loan, then that would be what, a 30%, right?
30%.
You got 30%
front ratio.
Now, is that too high? Does that not qualify,
no,
or does it?
No.
Okay, so where can someone go up to for that?
So we look at the back ratio.
Okay, now that's the thing. That's why I tell people, they look at me as a realtor and they go, wait a minute, why can't you figure this out? And I said, well, I know enough to be dangerous. I kind of know the calculations, but it changes. But at the end of the day, I tell people, unless you tell me, I don't know your credit score, I don't know your incomes, I don't know your life, like you as a lender are going to have to know to be able to start working with that. So that's where I want you to go with it. So okay. I tell them, front end ratio, I'll give you an idea, like, you're going to need to be about right here, but there's other factors that are going to, like, play with this number, and that's the back end, which gets into what?
So what the back end is we add up everything that you owe, that you are obligated to pay on a monthly basis.
Debts,
credit cards, car payments,
yep,
student loans,
yep,
okay, debt consolidation loans. All those monthly payments we add up, and we add it to the $3,000 mortgage payment. And let's say everything adds up to $1,500 a month.
Yep, okay. We got $1,500 in car payments and all of it.
The mortgage payment is $3,000.
Okay.
And basically, so that takes $4,500 out of your $10,000. So
yep,
your back ratio is going to be 45%. That's kind of where we stop on a conventional loan. You can go from 45 to 50%. You can even go over 50. You can get approvals for that. But until you have an approval, you want to base your pre-qualification on right around a 45%. You could stretch it a little bit to 47, 48, but that's where you kind of want to keep the pre-approval.
And this is where somebody might ask, wait a minute, I thought it was a hard line. I thought this back-end ratios on these mortgages for approvals, I thought those numbers don't change. When you say, like, well, if in this situation you're at 45, you really need to stay around that. But then you say it could be stretched a little bit. Somebody's going to ask, well, who gets to decide stretching the ratio? Like, what constitutes that? Is it credit? Is it say, cash reserves in the bank to pay extra mortgage payments, like I have extra cash in the bank? Or what are all those factors?
So if you have somebody that has outstanding credit, 800 credit scores, with tons of reserves, with, let's say, 24 months worth of reserves.
Wow, 2 years of mortgage payments in the bank.
Let's say that they have one job over the last 2 years.
Okay.
So they have the good job stability. Those all factor in, and they're going to, and the computer's going to say, okay, we will allow these guys to go up to 48 or 50% on their back ratio.
Okay.
So they're saying we will allow up to $5,000 a month to go out the door. Now, that doesn't include the monthly payments. That doesn't include private school, because that's a choice. Doesn't include a country club, because that's a choice.
Okay.
Doesn't include daycare. Doesn't include daycare except on the VA loans. Okay.
They're gonna. Oh wow.
That they will.
So the bottom line is
I made a mistake there. So basically, those things don't count, things that you elect to pay.
The elective things don't count. It's the hard things of credit card debt
that you owe.
And that's why I know there's been situations where you've said to me, okay, this borrower, this buyer is like right against the wall, but I have good news. Like, they wouldn't qualify this way, but they'll qualify the way they're sitting now. They're not going to qualify for this house. Let's say the house is $400,000. But, Darren, if they pay off this credit card that has $100 a month revolving amount and the credit card is $2,000, if they pay the $2,000 off, guess what? They're golden. They're inside that back-end ratio now with all these things considered. They can now buy that house. They have to do this paying off of this credit card, or if they just get rid of the dang car payment or this or that or whatever, that changes the entire landscape of their financial ratios for the loan. So talk into that. How often do you see that where you have to let someone know, hey, look, you can get this, but this is what you got to do?
Yes. So that happens of a fair amount, okay?
Yeah.
Because, and the reason it's happened a fair amount is last week when I talked a $400,000 loan today, principal and interest payment, is equivalent to a $650,000 loan 2.5 years ago. So a lot of that qualifying power went away, and so somebody wants to stretch to get the extra house, and we're going to say, okay, well, if we pay off this loan, then we can basically get you what you want.
Okay. And the, and if I'm not mistaken, the most forgiving back-end ratio is what loan type?
FHA.
FHA goes, the it has the most forgiving. So it's credit forgiving more so in that regard.
Yes.
And back-end ratios and all these other factors. And that's why at the end of the day, we're working with a client now, just wrote an offer. I'm thinking in my head initially going conventional 3%, and you're going, whoa, FHA is going to be better because the payment is going to be better, and here's all the factors of why.
Yes.
All right. So there you go, guys. This is why we're here. Make sure you come out to our open house here today. As soon as I'm out of here, from 1 to 3 at 1825 Tuscarora Drive here in Frederick, and giving away a gift card for Dunkin' Donuts, and you guys can call me. My information's coming up. How many homes are for sale in Frederick County? I'm telling you, Terry, whoever calls me and gets the closest is going to get the $100 gift card. Take care. Have a great weekend out there. Stay dry, and happy spring and summer coming on those strong. Here we go.
It's Meg Galler with Community Title Network. Experience close to home. Community Title Network is the most trusted title and settlement partner for real estate professionals, buyers, and sellers. Our team is comprised of the most skilled and experienced underwriters in our region to ensure your rights are secured as an owner or as a lender. We combine that with our skilled and experienced attorneys, settlement agents, and processing staff who ensure a smooth closing experience. Our Frederick office is conveniently located along Carroll Creek in downtown Frederick. For your next settlement, give Community Title Network a call. We're at 301-304-6620. At Community Title Network, we challenge the norm. Where good is the benchmark for many, we aim for greatness.
Hello, this is Terry Kernan with Presidential Bank Mortgage in downtown Frederick. And the best way to reach me always is on my cell phone at 301-639-9244. 301-639-9244. Or you can always email me at tkernan@presidential.com.
And this is Darren Ahern from RE/MAX Results. You can reach me anytime, 240-344-1713. Again, it's 240-344-1713 or at darrenahern@gmail.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to your Frederick Real Estate Update. We will see you each and every Saturday right here on WFMD at 11 o'clock.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.